Kathy Fisher, Reel 2. Yes, you were saying that you did your utmost to sort of preserve the literary
yes.
archive.
Yes.
Did you have to search far and wide
yes.
for that?
Yes. What happened was that the libretto for the opera of The Emperor of Atlantis, which became quite a success, I had the libretto because someone brought it out just after the war ended, who was in the Czech army. I don't know, I can't remember how he got it. Anyway, I had it. And I lent it to that Dr. Adler, who was the Czech who wrote about terrorism very greatly, and I forgot about it. And I forgot about it until the BBC put on the opera. And then I contacted him and I said, I would like it back. And he said he doesn't wish to give it back, but could I? He was terrified that I might write some money, which it hadn't even occurred to me. But he said, is there something I can do for you if I keep hold of it? So I said, yes, you can give me all the papers you have from Peter King. And he had quite a lot. And so I started that way. So he died some years ago, and his widow was a sculptor and a charming woman. I approached her and I said, you know, where is this libretto? I lent it to your husband. Could I please have it back? And she said, oh, it must have gone to one of the archives. I can't find it. And I sent you a copy. She sent me a beautiful copy, which I already had. And then some months later, I had a letter saying they had got it after all, and they had sent it to the actual heirs, because there's a cousin here who is legally, I presume, but not that there was anything for them, but anyway, she was a legal heir, and they had sent it to her. And I approached her, and she gave it back, and we gave it to the Wiener Library. And I have been approaching the Wiener Library for many, many months, saying we put it in the bank with Christa Wichmann, who was what Miss Hohmeyer worked at the Wiener Library, who's now retired, unfortunately. And they keep saying, yes, they will have it looked at, but the paper needs preservation. And it's such a precious thing. So that is very sad, really. I suggested to the Imperial War Museum, maybe they could say that they will have it looked at and in return to being able to display it. But I think neither party was very willing, so I'm not sure. But it would be a shame, because there were lots of loose pages of the poems, from 4 to 3, which were in a box. And they are also there. Now, they are terribly vulnerable. It's paper like new paper, you know. But we have got the poems, and I gave them to the Imperial War Museum, the copies, and they sent me a copy back, so I've got them as well. But there was an exhibition of his paintings in Italy, which Czech government organized some years ago, which was unfortunately, to my mind, not really representative of his work, because all the early, still very immature oils were shown, and none of the drawings, which are the really wonderful things. So,
and do you think your own art was influenced directly by Peter Keane?
Not at all. I don't think so. No. I went to this Officina Pragensis, which was partly also to do with poster design, and so that one should be able to earn a living. And I was very bad at this. And anyway, I don't think I was influenced until I came to this country, when I saw things. But That was much later. I was offered a scholarship, so in the intervening years, I was just drifting. I didn't have much time. I mean, I worked like a girl.
Yes, so I think it's back to your story now,
yes.
Kathy. Here you were in Prague, as you say, this would have been 1938-39, would it?
Yes.
Having that happy year.
Yes. I also had met in my hometown the brother of Ernst Buschinski, who was instrumental in getting me to England. He was perhaps the greatest early influence on me, because he had just returned from Russia. He was a physicist, and he was the last student of Madame Curie's, and when he was in Paris, he was approached by the Russians, and they recruited him for their research, and he went. And while he was there, the trials began, and they asked him to take Russian citizenship, and he was frightened that he wouldn't get out. So he said yes, but he wants to go and see his mother once more before, and came out. And that's when I met him. I was a child, really. But he must have, in retrospect, it's really very strange, but one takes these things for granted when they happen. He fell in love with me. He was 18 years older than I was. And he really woke, he was tremendously musical. And I was quite good as a child. And he opened up enormous musical horizons for me. So we played a lot of chamber music at home. And I had quite a nice voice. And he introduced me to enormous amounts of Mahler songs. And we sang the entire Bach, these early songs which were dedicated to Bach's wife, which are charming, and lots of other things like that. He said to my father, you must come out while you can. And he tried very hard to get my parents to move. And he was still there when I left for England. He went to England, and it was just on the day when the visas were introduced, and they didn't let him land. So he went to my singer. I think he went to Professor Picard. But he went afterwards to Paris, and he got stuck there, and he didn't survive. We never heard anything of him again. I felt rather, the beginning in this country was easy for me, because I felt, oh, well, it's only a little while until I will go to Paris. But then in 1940, when Paris fell, and I had a letter saying, you know, that we'll be in our long time before you hear anything. And people came from France, because there was a way through unoccupied, and he never came. And I felt abandoned. You know, I actually blamed him, I think, which is very strange, thinking about it. I was very immature. I don't think he had any clue how childish I was. But his brother was very good to me. I mean, mm-hmm. he wrote my name, I think, on the Vinton list.
Yes, I must ask you now about, you know, the decision for your parents to let you come to Britain, and how this occurred. You had a brother as well, didn't you?
Yes, 7 years younger, who was called Michael Ivanov. And my mother couldn't bring herself to add him to this list. But they were very keen for me to leave. They knew Fritz Duszynski well, and they were relying on him to have a sort of fatherly role, I think. But nevertheless, it was a terrible wrench. I mean, I But I remember that I wanted very much to go.
Do you remember anything about the arrangements and Nicholas Winton?
No.
Did you hear about him at all?
No.
How your parents got in touch?
My parents didn't get in touch. We had a postcard that I was going to be included in this transport. And I remember I had to go to the Gestapo for some reason. There was a long queue. You needed some exit papers, I don't remember what they were. And that was the only other time I remember seeing Edith Hartmann in the queue.
Who was that?
Hirschi and Honza's mother, the Hartmann's mother. She was also queuing. So they must have been there at that time, I don't really know. But the actual scene on the station, I have completely pushed under. Only now when Nicholas Winton showed me this film, it was the same station and it was the same vista. I felt really this was, you know, this was what it was like. I was the oldest by far in this compartment. There were some four or five little, very little ones, which I was supposed to look after. And I wasn't any good at this, because they were sick and they cried and they doubted themselves. And I had no idea how to handle this. And at some stage in Germany, we were all told to get out of the compartments, and they were lined up on the platform, and I don't remember anything about this either. But we then crossed the frontier, we went to the Hoek van Holland and came that way. And I remember nothing much about the journey, except what it looked like on the deck, that there were these rolled up coils of rope. I don't know why this made such an impression on me. And we slept through the crossing. And I don't remember anything except looking out of the window on the train going to Liverpool Street, how green the landscape was. And when we arrived in Liverpool Street, I was picked up by Erich Duschinski, who took me to some people from home who went on their way to America, but who were here for a fortnight. And I stayed with them for a fortnight. And he had found me what he thought was a good option. Because he had no money in this country at all. I was not covered by anybody for anything. Because my guarantee was just a cover by the Youth Aliyah, who had no money themselves. So he found me somewhere in the country, which it was near Wood Green Fording Bridge Hands, and the man's name was Stevenson. They used to grow chrysanthemums for the London market, but they were switching to war production and they were growing tomatoes. They were huge glass houses. And he took in about 20 children from Youth Aliyah, and they lived outside somewhere. I don't know whether they lived in a tent or something, but because he felt I would be better off in the house, which was a great mistake, he arranged for me to be with the Stevensons, and that was really very tough because they were terrible people, I think. maybe not so dreadful, but I had a dreadful time there. I mean, they were really. I mean, obviously, I didn't get any money for writing home, so I still had some international stamps. But I worked from early in the morning. Very early in the morning till late at night, and I didn't have a room. They let me sleep on the landing. And it was quite Dickensian. They were very primitive. And he was the farm manager for the local squire. And they didn't give me enough to eat, and I picked up an apple from the lawn, and they had me in front of the children to say that I was a thief. And generally, it was horrendous, really. So after...
Yes, what work were you doing?
I was working in the glass houses, I was cleaning the house, I was carrying great big trusses, washing from the farmhouse down to the meadow. I could barely carry all this stuff.
Was there no one checking on you, say, from Bloomsbury House?
Nothing. No, there wasn't anything officially there. And I didn't want to complain to Erich Duschinski. I felt it was, you know, I didn't feel I should somehow. So I stuck it as long as I could. But then they evacuated the children from the East End, and he took another batch of these children, because that was all tremendously cheap labor. And I had to do the washing for these children, and I caught impetigo contagiosis from them. And I felt suddenly I had enough, you know. So I packed my didn't say anything, I packed my luggage, or what I had there, and got on a train to London and presented myself to a very scared Erich Duschinski. I said, here I am.
And had they paid you wages for the work you were doing?
No, nothing.
And these kids, the other, 20,
yes,
that you were with, and then the East End children, where did they stay?
No. The first lot were also refugee children. They had their own... They had their own sort of leader who was responsible for them, and that would have been all right. And they just worked in the glass houses. But the next batch, they were evacuees from London, and they came. They were the ones who were caught in Petaigo.
And they stayed in the house, did they?
No.
No, where did they stay?
I have no idea where they stayed. Maybe in another tent. I mean, there was lots of room.
How did you get on with these people, you know, the Londoners? I was wondering about your language situation.
There was no cross connection whatsoever. They didn't talk to any of us. I didn't talk to anyone there except to the young man who was in charge of these other kids from other refugee children. And he was quite nice. He took me out to tea once. I remember exactly. We went to one of those country pubs, and there were all these brasses. I'd never seen this before. And it was a beautiful spot. Mm-hmm. There were bluebells, and it was lovely, that countryside. It didn't penetrate, because I was so unhappy. Then I came back to London.
Had you heard from your parents at that time?
I still had some letters until they got to Terracy.
Yes, but what date would you have come over? I ought to establish this.
I'm really trying.
Had the war...
The war hadn't
started
yet.
No. But the Germans had been into Prague.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I just remember seeing it was slushy weather. And I remember them moving in slowly with all the armoured vehicles and things. There was a feeling, you know, I had a feeling of doom, but I wasn't really scared until towards the end before I left. And I wasn't particularly scared. I was scared for my mother and my brother and my father, but because there didn't seem to be any way of them coming out. And that was the case. But...
Did your parents give you any advice? Do you remember the sort of parting from the family?
No.
And what you were...
I don't remember anything about that last day.
Or what you took with you?
Well, I took quite a lot of things with me. But most of it was stolen, because I had it stored in Bloomsbury House, in the basement. And I only got a very small amount of my things. So it didn't really matter. I mean, it was... was not a very good influence.
Yes. So there was this connection with Bloomsbury House then?
Yes, yes, but I had nothing really bad properties in the case. Apart from the fact that I presume they use Aliyama's to have an office there. And they let me put my suitcases there in the basement. But I can't remember what happened when I got back to London.
But we're following on your earlier movements, if you don't mind. When you came to England,
yes.
Would that have been very long before war started?
A few months. I must have come in spring.
In the spring of 39?
Yes.
Yes. I see. Do you remember the actual outbreak of war? When war started, when Germany invaded Poland?
No, I don't remember it. No.
How long did you communicate with your parents, do you think?
I think there were still... My a friend of mine, with whom I lived subsequently, her uncle lived with a lady in Switzerland who was able to have a contact still with Terezin. So we still got some letters. But you know, I have never been able to read my mother's letters from Israel. I've got them, but I can't read them. I can't read them now either. I know I must auto read them before I die, but I just can't read them.
Yes, from what you're saying and the way you've sort of repressed your memory,
yes.
You were deeply traumatized by this experience, it seems, from what you're saying.
Probably. But the fact is that, you know, one never discussed it and never... And it isn't that I held back, but I always had the feeling that my daughter did not really want to know. So I didn't tell her anything except when she asked me. I mean, she knew the brother. She got so upset when she heard the story about me being... about the apple on the lawn. She got so incredibly upset that after that I felt I didn't wish to upset her to such a degree. And really, she knows, of course, but and she's very close to Chrissy and she knows all that anger, you know. But basically, I have not discussed any of this with anyone.
Mm-hmm. But you still have all your mother's letters?
I have all of them. Well, I have them, yes.
How about your father? Did he write to you or your brother?
He wrote the occasional postcard, which is also there, but didn't even have to say anything much, you know. Just love him. I also had a letter from Peter Keane, still from there. Just one. Because we quarreled before I left. This hindsight, I now realize that I was so very childish. I was very, very mature in many things, but not emotionally. And when I came, really, basically, I stopped developing, I think. I do think that is the case, yes. But I had a bad fall some years ago, and that was, I think something happened. It isn't all trauma, it's also that I probably damaged myself in more than the hospital at the time. So I have great difficulties in recalling details, and not only regarding my use, but generally.
When you returned to London, when you took yourself off from the Stevensons and you presented yourself to Eric, what was the reaction? You know, what did he think of this?
He just took it on the chin. He was really very good, but he was a young man also. I mean, he was just about 30, I think, but not quite even yet. And he didn't have any money. As I remember that... He took me out for a treat, and we went to some small cafe or something in West Hampstead. And this was my first Greek yogurt. I never had yogurt before at all. I detest it now, but I thought it was wonderful. And we had these little tins of pineapple from Japan. I think there were from Woolworths. And these were, I was so starved when I came back from the place. Oh yes, I know. Then after that, this friend of mine, with whom I thought to communicate, shared things, and he was very nice. And I went to the David Eder farm, which was a preparatory farm run on kibbutz principles as a preparation for Israel. It was run by the Hechalutz, by the Hechalutz, I think. And that was during this terrifically cold winter, and it was in 1940. Now, that was a comparatively happy time, although physically it was absolutely punishing. There were no floors, just, you know, the ground. And every morning, it was built like a barrack square. And it probably was a barracks, I presume. Every morning when we woke up, we had sort of basins with the jug. It was frozen. And I remember picking Brussels sprouts in sort of frozen, and that's a horrible job. So we worked in all sorts of places there in the kitchen. And because my friend was very, very astute, she had several admirers who would steal the water from the laundry for us. So we were the only ones who had a bath, I think, in one of those laundry.
Whereabouts was this farm?
It was in Kent. I don't remember the address, but when there came an order that all the enemy aliens, it was a protected area, so all the German and Austrian boys were sent to Australia, I think. They were interned and shipped off. But we were friendly aliens, and we were allowed to fend for ourselves. So we didn't have any money. I mean, this is amazing now. Nothing at all.
Who organised? Who was in charge of you at this farm? The Davidian farm, was it called?
David Eder. It's a name.
David.
I don't know how you spell the Eder. I think E D E R.
E D E R. Right.
I think so that is quite well documented. That place, I think. In charge. I don't think anybody was in charge. I can't remember.
Who was organising the work?
I don't remember who organised it. It had a lot of English members as well, and most of the people went to Israel, the ones who didn't go into the army. But at the time you couldn't, I think. Anyway, there was no way of going there. But it didn't last very long, because this order came fairly soon, that it was an exclusion zone for foreigners. So then we had nowhere to go, and I think we were taken in by an Orthodox Jewish hostel in Stamford Hill, I think. Which was also hilarious, because my friends and I were considered to be terribly... first of all, we were foreign. Secondly, we weren't religious. And thirdly, we were not members of the... These girls were working for the sweatshops in the East End. They were sewing on buttons.